The Australian Space Research Institute was formed with a merger of the Australian Space Engineering Research Association and the OSROC Projects Group now about 4 years ago. We really wanted an organisation in Australia because at the time there wasn't much happening in the way of space education, and there was a whole group of engineers, young engineers primarily, in Australia that wanted to be a part, that wanted to be a part of a space program in this country. So that was the emphasis for forming ASRI, was to create an organisation that could provide education, training and skills development to Australian scientists, engineers and others. Remember these facilities? These are all pictures of Woomera's heyday, back when we had a... Sorry? history of a bygone era. Yeah. These were the things that actually happened out of Australia some 30 years ago. This is Launcher Area 6 out at Woomera, the rocket on the pad there is the Eldo rocket, joint with the British, the French, the Germans and a half of other European countries. And basically this was the pre-runner to Ariane Space, which is now operating very profitably out of French Guiana. Other vehicles that were launched out of Woomera include the Black Arrow. The Brits were very good at making some excellent hardware. Their only problem was they only fired one and then cancelled their projects. This is a Black Arrow. In fact, they launched four of them, only the final one put something into orbit. And then the Brits cancelled the project with some agreement with the US that they'd launch all their satellites on US rockets. Australia. Well, Australia is this little black bit. The rest is US. But that is a Redstone rocket that was left over after the Sparta series of re-entry trials that the US were running out at Woomera back in the late 60s. And as true collaborative programs go, the whole program started over a beer in a pub when the US guys told the Australian guys, oh, we've got a spare rocket. Our program went real well. They didn't want to send it back, so they all decided, yeah, we can put together something in true ASRI style over a year and whip it into space, and they did. In 12 months, they put a satellite into orbit. So that's a bit of a history. Where are we now? With ASRI, our aims are to develop and advance space technology and science in Australia, to conduct, encourage, and promote space-related research and development, to provide educational project opportunities to students, and to conduct, coordinate, and support projects for the above goals. ASRI is divided into four main program areas. We have the OSROC program of launch vehicles. We have the Australis Microsat program, which includes the AMSAT North America project, which QUT students are working on at the moment. We have the CITR rocket program using Zuni rockets over there and CITR rockets here. And we have a scramjet development program in conjunction with Queensland University. The goal of the scramjet one is to actually flight test scramjet models and prototypes, engines, that have been developed by the university researchers. The OSROC program, there are four stages in the OSROC program. We've completed stages one and two. OSROC 3 is now the primary project of the OSROC program. That's this vehicle on the rollers next to you, full scale. OSROC 1 was primarily an experimental vehicle, first vehicle liquid-fueled rocket built in Australia. OSROC 2 was an order of magnitude more complicated. OSROC 3, similarly, is basically an order of magnitude more complicated than OSROC 2. And OSROC 4, our ultimate goal with the OSROC program, is to put a microsatellite into orbit from Woomera. The OSROC 1 program commenced in 1988 at Monash University. A group of students, along with some keen volunteers from the Space Association of Australia, got together and built OSROC 1 along guidelines of the Pacific Rocket Society's rocket, which was launched in California in about 1987. It was basically only 100 millimetres in diameter, 2.6 metres long. There are pictures of it up on the wall, if anyone wants to have a look at that a bit later. Had a thrust of 1,200 newtons and burnt for 7 seconds. The vehicle took off successfully, went into cloud. We launched from Puckapunyal, which is renowned for being very windy and very cloudy, and we had both on that day. The recovery system wasn't successful. We lost the telemetry from the vehicle at about 3.5 kilometres altitude, where it was clocked at about 580 kilometres per hour. We believe that the forward section of the rocket got ripped off from the dynamic pressure, and then we found neither the nose nor the tail, despite numerous range searches. Just a basic rundown of OSROC 1/Caratell. It's a concentric tank arrangement where we have one aluminium tube inside another. The inner tank holds the nitric acid, and the space, the cavity between the two tubes, holds the furfural alcohol. We have a pyrotechnic valve block, an injector, and an ablative engine. The engine's basically a stainless steel tube with ablative materials inside and a graphite throat. Above that, we have the pressurisation cap block. We have a parachute recovery system, some electronics, and in the case of Caratell, there's a pitot tube which doubles as the antenna. With OSROC 1, we only had a pure antenna coming out the top end. The success we had with OSROC 1, we decided to continue. We came up with a concept for OSROC 2, and this, myself and two other engineering students at Monash University, started the OSROC 2 program. The project obviously went past 1 year of a student project, and it took about, I think it's 3 years from start to end, to actually get OSROC 2, the first one, out to the pad at Woomera in 1992. This rocket's much bigger. It's 6.2 metres in length, 250 millimetres in diameter, fueled by liquid oxygen and kerosene. This is our first vehicle we started playing around with liquid oxygen, which is a cryogenic fluid. The thrust, obviously, an order of magnitude higher at just over a tonne, a burn time of about 18 seconds. Guidance, it was only fin stabilised. OSROC 3 is actually the first that we're developing with an active guidance system. The mass, fueled mass, is about 225 kilograms. The star there is, as most people know, that vehicle exploded on the pad out at Woomera due to some problems with the plumbing, particularly check valves and a LOX valve. They say that you're generally not inducted into the Hall of Rocketry until you've had your first major explosion. We've had that, so we're playing up there now with the big boys. We can blow up a rocket just as good as them. OSROC 2 had we have a liquid oxygen tank, kerosene tank, the engine here. This time we went for a regen engine, which is where we cycled the kerosene around a cooling passage around the engine before bleeding into the injector. This engine has undergone 6 static firings, one failed launch attempt and one successful launch attempt, and is still ready to keep going. It's about the only bit of the rocket that came back in a usable situation. Both these tanks are pressurised by helium gas located up here. We have regulators and valves controlling the flow. We have an electronics module located above the helium tank, a parachute system, nose cone and pitot tube. So it's a much more advanced vehicle. The electronics had an onboard video camera, and a lot of people, I'm sure, have seen the footage of the rocket leaving the rail, which was very impressive. We also had a triaxial accelerometer mount and various other parameters, such as all the tank pressures. It was actually because of the telemetry we got back, we could work out what went wrong with the initial vehicle showing tank pressures, and also even with the OSROC 2-2. It didn't go as high or as far as we would have liked it to have gone, and the telemetry allowed us to work out why it didn't. 2-2 is essentially an improved OSROC 2. The length's slight amount shorter. Its diameter's a bit smaller because we actually used extruded tubing, which we found after we'd already built OSROC 2. Similarly, it used exactly the same engine. The burn time was reduced a bit to bring the acceleration up. We had slightly shorter tanks, less propellant, and so the launch weight there, 220 kilograms. And this is a very old slide. It was successfully launched, as probably no point in putting this one up. Everyone's seen that photo. That's actually, as you see, the plume, quite a nice plume here. A few seconds later, the plume gets richer and richer. What had happened was we weren't getting helium pressurisation gas into the liquid oxygen tank, so the oxygen pressure just dropped off very quickly, whereas the kerosene tank pressure stayed at a constant. What that meant is the mixture ratio got richer and richer, So the blacker and blacker the plume, and then eventually the Kero all ran out, and then we got a nice white plume, which everyone thought meant the rocket was working well. After OSROC 2, in fact, before we'd even finished OSROC 2, we were looking at the ultimate goal of what we want to do with the OSROC program, and the ultimate goal is to build a micro-satellite launch vehicle. But we weren't game enough to go there in one step. We needed an intermediate vehicle whereby we could test all the technologies that we need on an orbital vehicle, and that's where OSROC 3 comes in. OSROC 3 uses composite tanks, carbon fiber, composite fairings, a regen steerable engine, inertial navigation and guidance. So it's basically unfinned, so it's a completely unstable vehicle, obviously requiring guidance to keep it going in a straight line. So it's an order of magnitude more complicated than OSROC 2, but we needed to do this to test out all the technologies for an orbital vehicle which we wanted to build. It also serves as the core module for OSROC 4, whereby we just cluster these OSROC 3 modules around an OSROC... we cluster four of these modules around a central core, so we have five OSROC 3 modules making up an OSROC 4. The primary mission of OSROC 3 is to provide educational and skills development opportunities to Australian scientists and engineers. The secondary mission is to carry a useful scientific payload of 100 kilograms, that's actually 150 when you include the module and the recovery system, to an altitude of 500 kilometres on a predetermined and controlled suborbital trajectory and recover it intact, the intact being the hard bit. OSROC 3 will be 9 metres long, no point, it's that big. Once again, it will use liquid oxygen and kerosene. The engine will produce about 3.5 tonnes thrust at sea level and about 4.2 tonnes thrust in a vacuum. The burn time is 80 seconds, which means the vehicle is thrusting from sea level right up to about 80 kilometres, which is pretty much a vacuum. The guidance will be by a gimbaled engine, where we steer it in pitch and yaw, and in cold gas thrusters for roll control. The simulant for the cold gas thrusters is at the end of the, just under the end of the rocket down here. One of the key parameters here is we're aiming for 0.85 or 85% fuel mass for the rocket. Everything below the interface of the payload module, which is the first black line down, no, next one down, yeah, everything below that, 85% of that mass will be propellant and 15% will be structural and component mass. And then the 150 kilograms is everything forward of that line. Just in basic form, we have a helium tank. Once again, we're going for a pressurised propellant system, fueling system, as opposed to turbo pumps, which are much more complicated. A liquid oxygen tank, kerosene tank, thrust frame, a gimbal, and the regen cooled, at this stage it looks like it'll be a regen cooled rocket motor. Down here we have a boat tail fairing, intertank fairings, payload fairing and nose cone. All the fairings and nose cones are hand layup carbon fibre composites, and all the tanks are filament wound. The flight profile for OSROC 3, it'll be launched off a vertical stand. There'll be a tower that you can service the rocket by. Both OSROCs 1 and 2 were launched off rails because they're only fin stabilised, and we have to make them launch quickly, high accelerations, to get up aerodynamic stability. With OSROC 3, because it's guided, we can take off much slower, which means we can have a much higher propellant loading and go a lot higher. So the rocket will take off, burn for 80 seconds, at which point the payload module, the rocket... This bit's undecided yet as to whether we actually eject the nose cone or not, but that's a later issue. Definitely separate the payload module, which coasts up to 500 kilometres, and in that coasting period, there's about 6 minutes of microgravity time for you doing the microgravity experiments, and at altitude for doing any form of remote sensing, image taking of the Earth. It will then come back down, re-enter, deploy through a series of drogue parachutes out to a 9-cell ram air canopy, which is controlled by the onboard GPS, to glide itself back to a known point on the ground. Bits of hardware that have already been produced. This here is the parachute pack. We were hoping to have trials this year, but apparently the student projects that we're working on, that students actually, what happened to them? Deferred or did something or other. But hopefully next year we'll have some projects working on the control system, electronics, and the integration of the parachute system, and actually do drops out of an aircraft and test out this gliding system. And down here we have the prototype fairings, intertank fairing, nose cone, and payload fairing. We had a student project this year, which we'll hear about tomorrow, that actually built the test rig to test out these fairings and load them up, and to date we've had some very good results from them, showing that the fairings are quite adequate as they are. For those interested in the avionics, this is one of Colin Biggs's overheads. This gives a broad overview of the avionics in OSROC 3. The hub of the unit is the flight control unit. Attached into the flight control, we have obviously the power supply, which feeds all the electronics. We have the inertial measurement unit. We have a gimbal controller for controlling the two electro-hydraulic actuators running the motor gimbal, roll thruster drivers, the payload recovery system drivers, the separation pyrotechnic actuators drivers there, GPS receiver, anywhere up to, how many sensors now? 256 sensors I think we can handle in the vehicle. They range from pressure transducers, thermocouples, strain gauges, flow meters, all types of sensors. The vehicle will be completely sensored out so that we know exactly what happens right through flight, including a lot of the digital computer data as well. Unlike OSROCs 1 and 2, OSROC 3 being guided, if something goes wrong, the vehicle has quite a way to go in any direction and can cause a lot of damage. It's got a vertical range of 500 kilometres, which means it can probably go about 600 kilometres downrange if given the right shaping on the trajectory, which means we need a flight termination system to ensure that if the vehicle does digress from its nominal flight path, it can be terminated. Now, that doesn't mean that we just set off a lump of C4 and blow the thing to buggery, but all we need to do is to... We'll be following a ground trace of the rocket on display panels in the control room. And if the impact point predictions go out across a range boundary line, all you need to do is make the vehicle non-propulsive, i.e. just sever the kerosene line and then let the fuels dump out, and that's all you really need to do. So that's what we are planning at this stage. I mean, we're going to hear a presentation on the flight termination system tomorrow as well for two students from QUT. C-band transponder to assist with the tracking, and a telemetry system. I won't go into too much detail on all that, but we'll be discussing a lot of this material on Monday. But just suffice to say that the sort of things that we have done so far with OSROC 3 is we've set up a complete 6-degree of freedom model simulation of the vehicle in a program called Matrix X, and these are the basic blocks inside this 6-degree of freedom system. It takes into account all the aerodynamics, equations of motion, the atmosphere, inertial properties, your thrust. There'll also be blocks added later on to take account of the dynamics, the vehicle vibrations, etc., going through the atmosphere. And then the flight sensors, that's the inertial measurement unit, your control law, the software, flight actuators, and it basically allows you to fly the system. And with that model, we can determine things like control actuator fluid requirements, we can work out whether the vehicle is going to remain stable, we can work out how cheap we can make the actuators to still make it work. So it really helps you define your system. But a model like that is only as good as the data you can put into it, particularly when it comes to aerodynamics. A 1/12th or 1/24th scale aerodynamic model was made of OSROC 3 and tested in the wind tunnels at DSTO before they shut them down. And this was actually a Schlierian photo of the vehicle at an angle of attack of 10 degrees and a Mach number of 2.8. And from this, we got all the aerodynamic parameters. Warren Williams, an ASRI member in Adelaide, actually conducted these trials. But one thing with OSROC 3 is it's a fairly serious project. Unlike OSROCs 1 and 2, which weren't all that expensive comparatively. OSROC 3 has a lot of systems, and it's not the sort of thing you just want to put together and take out to the pad and hope it works. You've got to be able to test the whole thing beforehand. You also have to manage the project in such a way that you can pick up flaws, faults, etc., well before the rocket reaches the pad. So we do have a fairly structured project management scheme which will incorporate all these test and evaluation concepts. Moving on to OSROC 4. This program commenced in 1991, and given its reliance on the OSROC 3 program, it's been moving relatively slowly, with just a few projects happening each year. We're looking at a three-stage vehicle using OSROC 3 propulsion modules. The specifications there, we've got four OSROC 3 modules in the first stage, one OSROC 4 module in the second stage, and one solid-fueled rocket as the third stage. The guidance is similarly the gimbaled engines and cold gas thrusters, and once again inertial navigation GPS for navigation. It'll weigh in about 8 tonnes at launch and be able to lift about a 30 to 40 kilogram satellite into a 300 to 400 kilometre orbit. That's what the vehicle looks like. This was actually put together by Salv Carter, who was one of two students at Cranfield University in the UK who did projects on OSROC 4 this year. This gives you another view showing the wedge tail rocket motors. The wax wings were the third stage rocket motors used in the British Black Arrow, which was launched out at Woomera back in the late 60s, early 70s, the photo I showed earlier. British Aerospace, Royal Ordnance, have had these remaining wedge-tail waxwing motors sitting out in the UK storehouses now for about 20 years. And for the last 2 years, we've been negotiating and trying to get them out of them. Eventually, they succumbed, and we picked up these motors about a year and a half ago. They were sent out from the UK through our partners over there at Aspire Space, which is a similar organisation to our own. These motors now are located out at Building 5, which is ASRI's building over in Adelaide. They're empty of propellant, and we've had two students at Adelaide University, one who did work experience at DSTO, develop a solid propellant to load these motors with. We hope within the next 2 years to load a number of these motors and static test them out at DSTO prior to them being used in OSROC 4. You can only use each motor once, but we've got about 7 motor casings and nozzles. Moving on to our other programs, the CITR program. This one commenced in about 93 when we found out that the RAF were wanting to get rid of about 1,000 small rocket motors. They are the CITR and Zuni rockets. Zuni's over there, CITR's here. They are getting the years on, but they've both been tested out and both still work quite well. I'll only briefly cover a bit on the scramjet program. Andrew Mulholland, the scramjet team leader, will give a presentation on that tomorrow. There were two aspects to the scramjet project. One is the student design and mock-up program, which is now evolving into the flight test program, the subscale flight test program of scramjet combustors. The hypersonic test vehicle project was one that was started about 3 years ago, and we were hoping to launch a much larger scramjet prototype on board Honest John Nike rockets that would have been brought out for the NASA sounding rocket trials in 95, I think it was, late 95. But that project is now cancelled. That particular project would have had a scramjet test vehicle that looks something like this. You have 6 scramjet combustors mounted around a central tank. Very sharp nose for the high Mach numbers. We're looking at Mach 5 minimum to have the scramjets work. And then a mounting adapter and other avionics and electronics that mounted onto the booster rocket. There's actually a shroud that covers the outside of those combustor modules. 2 solid rockets would boost it up to Mach 5. It would stay attached to the second stage, and then the scramjet would fire up for a brief period of 4 to 5 seconds just to test out. And whilst that's 4 to 5 seconds, I'll just point that out, that the shock tubes at Queensland University, Andrew, how long do they get per shot? they get milliseconds of operation time. So 4 seconds is like a lifetime of scramjet testing compared to the shock tubes that are currently used on the ground. We'll probably also hear more about Australis. Is there an Australis? There's no Australis paper this year. But we'll be hearing from the QUT students about the AMSAT-NA project, which is also hooked in with the Australis program. Australis is looking at the development of a 50 kilogram microsat, 30 to 50, depending on the number of trays you can. It's basically a multi-tray system where you can stack up the trays and have a satellite build up anywhere between 30 and 50 kilograms. You're looking at about a 0.4 centimetre cube. This is very similar to the Surrey satellites, so we weren't looking too far afield. It actually is a system that works. It's been used by the AMSAT people. It's also been used by Surrey. A number of other people use these tray arrangements. It's very effective, particularly when you've got people building a satellite in different places. People can have their own tray and work on their own equipment and then integrate it only at the end of the program. Work on that program has included the design and development of the satellite trays, and we've actually had one built at University of New South Wales, was the one that actually built it and did vibration tests with the tray, and basically that was a complete success, that project on testing the trays. The actual design that was developed was sufficient to meet flight loads. Okay, just moving on to some other ASRI type issues. One of our big problems has always been, where do we go? We didn't have any facilities. We needed facilities. If we're going to build a rocket this size and OSROC 4, we need facilities where we can assemble and test these things. We now have two facilities, one located in Adelaide and one located in Melbourne. The Adelaide facility, which I have a map of here, is an ex-DSTO weapons building. No longer used. It's got about foot thick concrete walls, basically a bunker. It's got conducting floors, it's got overhead cranes. It was only refitted about 3 years before we got it. It was part of ADI actually refitted it before they closed down. So we got a refitted building. We've got it basically free of charge, provided no one else wants it. And they're developing that area in the near future, so we're going to work on getting a permanent arrangement with that building now. But this building here is big enough to do all the OSROC developments up to and including OSROC 4. The other facility is a smaller one located here in Melbourne at Norbert's Place. We have a garage there, we have machining equipment, and we have one of the best machinists in the country located there at the facility. who's involved in the program? These are the universities who we've worked with to date, basically 10 off. We don't have projects running with all of them every year, but they go in cycles. All depends on how many people, ASRI people, we have to supervise projects and in which states they are at the time. One of ASRI's big problems is we are a voluntary organisation. Our people move about. We've got 2 or 3 people overseas at the moment. And similarly, depending on work commitments, we can only get a certain amount done. I mean, this is basically a second job for a lot of us. And in terms of support, I'll just put that one up, along with a quote that sort of summarises what ASRI's about. It's one thing for students to go through life being told about something, but until you actually do it, you really have no concept of the whole thing. And ASRI is very much a hands-on organisation. We support a lot. We've had a lot of theoretical student projects done. We've also had a lot of practical student projects done. But ultimately, it's hardware and kit that we want to build and test, and that's basically what we're all about. It also shows there the number of organisations that have helped us out over the years. So what I'll do now that our other speakers arrived, for the final speaker for this today, I'll basically stop there. And if anyone's got any brief questions, be happy to answer them. Okay, in most cases, we operate on the philosophy that you don't need money if everybody gives you everything you want. But that philosophy does, as you say, there are a lot of things we do have to buy. We were sponsored by the Australian Space Office before they got cancelled 3 years ago. In fact, we're getting about $25,000 a year from them. We will probably be receiving some funding support through the CRC, but that will be tightly linked to the Microsat project, not to the OSROC project. Our big job for 98 is to find sponsors. We'd like to get about 50, a regular 50,000 a year at least, to keep going with the OSROC 3 program, because it's getting very close to where we need substantial amounts of money for that. We're not paying any. We estimate the OSROC 3 program at about $5 million, of which we'll only need about, I think it's $700,000 total for two vehicles and one ground test vehicle, two flight vehicles, one ground test, because all the labour's free. So the bulk of the cost is labour, but the labour's free. So really it's only parts and materials that we do need the funding for. So we're looking about $500,000 to $700,000 to complete the OSROC 3 program. Yeah, the main reason, you've obviously seen the OSROC 3 program plan document. That was put together to forward out to companies and government departments to attract sponsorship. And so we'll be going out and probably doing a bit of a roadshow sometime next year to talk to a lot of different companies. A lot of things we can get, if they can provide us with goods and services, would be a major plus. So it's much easier for a company to give us their goods and services than it is for to give us cash. You don't. A few seconds after the motor burns out, the last part of the trajectory, the motor will be pretty... You won't be guiding to a course in the last part. You'll just be keeping the engine pretty much straight, and then you'll shut the engine off. It will go into probably start a slow turn, because you'll never get it perfectly aligned. You then separate the payload module, which springs off, drifts off. The payload module, depending on how we go and what we want to do with the first flight, we'll have a cold gas attitude control system on it, just very small nitrogen thrusters to keep it aligned. Yeah, it's very small. The building was actually made to do final integration of rocket motors. What they do then is take the motor out there and perform the hazardous igniter checks, not fire them, just test them, check them, the continuity. We can fire small things in there, but not OSROC 3 size engines. We will probably do those at the DSTO static firing site, which is over on the Edinburgh base. You could probably fire it there. There's no reason why you couldn't fire it there, but it's probably not an ideal spot to do it. You really haven't got the length till you get to the wall to actually take any good measurements if you wanted things out the back. Yeah. Okay, but OSROC 3 will be described in more detail on Monday when we have the workshop on OSROC 3. They're solid fuel, but they're not loaded. They're empty. They're already at Building 5, and we'll be filling them up with a solid propellant which we've developed here in Australia. How do we get there? Yeah. No, it's just the third stage motor, which is completely independent. It's nothing related to the... It's a third stage.